Welcome to the Graveyard Girls podcast with Amelia and Natasha. This is our witch trial season.
Yeah. It's the first of 27 episodes. Okay, so yeah, so obviously this first episode's on Patreon. Now, for any of you that are signed up for Patreon, what we will do for this is a bit of, which is not what we normally do, we obviously have a free episode each week. So for those that aren't Patreon, they will only be able to access our free episodes, which is on different podcasting platforms. But for you, our Patreons, we will be adding those free episodes also to Patreon so that you don't have to flit between different podcast platforms in order to access the whole witch trials. So you will be able to get the whole thing solely on Patreon, which we thought would make it a little bit easier for you. Well, I hope it does anyway.
It should do.
So hopefully it has been a long time in the planning, and we came up with the idea a few months ago and it seemed a long way off, and then the weeks have jumped down very, very quickly.
It has.
And yeah, it's weird. Actually, obviously, we're recording this now much earlier than you will hear it. And, well, not much earlier, a few weeks.
we're still in front of ourselves.
Yeah, no, we're fine. We're still ahead. We're just not on the original plan, shall we say. But it's fine. We've got this going. Hopefully sorted our interference issues out now, so that very much shouldn't be a problem for the witch trials.
We'll touch wood.
Touch wood, yes. So, before we delve straight into the witch trials and the history of it, I thought I'd share a few little bits with you. So, obviously, quite an important question in this is, what is a witch? Which is kind of vital, we need to know that. So, a witch can be both a man, woman, or child who possesses magical powers. Often associated with evil or black magic, witches are best known for the spells they cast and potions they brew. Often depicted as wearing black cloaks and pointy hats and flying around on broomsticks. Now, I must admit, when I first looked into this, I was a bit confused. I presumed witches were female and wizards were male.
No.
And it wasn't until I looked in I realised that was actually different. Mm-hmm. So, yes, so you can have male witches.
Do you know the reason behind the supposed, like, flying on a broom thing?
I touch into that, okay. Into one of our other episodes.
Okay.
So we'll have our first episode next week will be the science behind witches.
Okay, because I was going to drop a fact then.
You can drop your fact next week, Natasha. Okay. You can kick it off and then I can go, "Ooh, I didn't do my research properly. Now you surprised me." Or I can go, "Yes, I did know that, Natasha, and I shall explain it more."
You probably know it.
But yes, so obviously witches date back a long time. In fact, they go all the way back to ancient times. So early witches were people who practiced witchcraft using magic spells and calling upon spirits for help to bring change. Most witches were thought to be pagans doing the devil's work. Many, however, were in fact healers or wise women whose choice of profession was misunderstood. Now, if you want to go back to our early Patreon episodes, I believe it's episode number 2, we do a history of poisoning, and I do touch on that a little bit more in there on the early witches. So if that's another episode you're interested in, maybe go and check that out.
Also, my torture episode,
yes,
is what they would have done to accused witches as well.
Yes,
most of the torture methods anyway.
Yeah, so if you're new to Patreon and you've only just signed up for the witch trials, we do actually have, I think it's 10 episodes already on here covering a variety of historical, and I think witches cross over quite a lot. I've done the werewolves as well, that's also witchy related, so that's probably a good one to check out in between these episodes coming out. But yeah, one of the earliest records of a witch is in the Bible, in the Book of Samuel, written between 931 BC and 721 BC. It tells the story of King Saul, who fought a witch of Endor to summon the dead prophet Samuel's spirit to help him defeat the Philistine army. Other Old Testament verses condemn witches, such as Exodus, is it 22:18? Yeah. And which says, "Thou shalt not suffer a witch to live." Additional biblical passages caution against divination, chanting, or using witches to contact the dead. This hatred for the wise women and healers brings us on to the axe, which is what Natasha's explained a little bit about for us.
There are many witchcraft acts throughout England and Scotland.
Okay.
Okay, the first one is the Witchcraft Act of 1574.
Ooh.
Religious tensions in England during the 16th and 17th centuries resulted in the introduction of a series of penalties for witchcraft. Henry VIII's Act of 1542 was the first to define witchcraft as a felony, a crime punishable by death and the forfeit of goods. So in the Act, it said it was forbidden to use, so I'm going to quote the Act now, use, devise, practice, or exercise, or cause to be devised, practiced, or exercised, conjugations of spirits, witchcrafts,
Have we just summoned someone? Their hearing is already. It did sound a bit like, whoa.
What was that?
We've summoned someone. They're listening in. They're letting us know they're excited for the witch trials from Sasha.
Okay,
join in.
Spirits, witchcrafts.
No, sorry to butt in. It's a witch hunter. He's getting angry. That's why we've summoned him.
Oh no. Witchcrafts, enhancements, or sorceries to then tend to find money or treasure or to waste, consume, or destroy any persons in his body members or to provoke any persons to unlawfully love or for any other unlawful intent or purpose. There's some other words that are very old English, so I'm going to skip to the end. The Act also removed the benefit of the clergy, a legal device that exempted the accused from the jurisdiction of the King's Court from the convicted of witchcraft. This statute was repealed by Henry's son Edward VI in 1547.
Okay.
So there was another Witchcraft Act in 1563. This was an act against conjurings, enhancements, enchantments, and witchcrafts. This was passed early in the reign of Elizabeth I, and it was in some respects more merciful towards those found guilty of witchcraft than its predecessor, demanding the death penalty only when harm had been caused.
Okay, lesser, seems a bit nicer.
Yeah, lesser offences were punishable by a term of imprisonment. The Act provided that anyone who should use, practice, or exercise any witchcraft, enchantment, charm, or sorcery, whereby any person shall happen to be killed or destroyed, was guilty of a felony without benefit of clergy and was to be put to death.
Okay.
Indicaments of homicide caused by witchcraft began to appear in the historical record in the period following the passage of the 1563 Act. Out of the 1,158 homicide victims identified in the surviving records, 228 were suspected of being killed by witchcraft. By comparison, poison was suspected in only 31 of these cases.
Oh.
Out of 157 people accused of killing with witchcraft, roughly half were acquitted, and only 9 accused were men.
Okay. So as we, I think we already know it was predominantly women anyway.
Yes. But there are some in Europe that I touch on in one of my individual cases where it's opposite.
Yeah, a lot of men.
Which is strange. So we are going on to the Scottish Witchcraft Act of 1563. Under the Scottish Witchcraft Act, both the practice of witchcraft and consulting with witches were a capital offence.
Okay, so getting the chop or burnt.
Yes. This act stayed on Scottish statute books until it was repealed as a result of a House of Lords amendment to the Bill of the Post-Union Witchcraft Act of 1735.
And is the one that originally made the Scottish acts, that would have been James IV, am I correct? And is he the one that then becomes James I of England?
Yes, he's got two names. He's James IV and I.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I thought I was like, I'm sure he was linked with the original thing. Yes. So would he have passed the original act in Scotland?
Yes.
And then it's Parliament has intervened when he's become James I of England? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, is that right?
He is basically the main thing that kicks off the Scottish ones.
Okay.
Okay. And then he's the one who gets rid of it in Scotland.
Oh, okay.
He's it's very weird.
Okay, so I suppose he holds a lot of power, doesn't he? So
yeah, but he starts it.
Changes his mind. He's like, yes. Oops, no, got this wrong.
He even wrote a book about it.
Oh, did it?
Mm.
Oh, okay. Let something new already.
I will cover it in my Scottish witchcraft episode.
Well, I look forward to hearing that.
Okay, there's another Witchcraft Act of 1604. In the year following James I's accession to the English throne, the Elizabethan Act was broadened by Edward Coke and others to bring the penalty of death without benefit of clergy to anyone who invoked evil spirits or communed with familiar spirits.
Right, okay.
The Act's full title was An Act Against Conjuration, Witchcraft, and Dealing with Evil and Wicked Spirits. It was this statute that was enforced by Matthew Hopkins,
right? Okay.
Who I talk about in a later episode.
Yeah, he's a massive witch hunter, isn't he?
He's a witch finder general.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
He's a bad man.
He's a very bad man. The acts of Elizabeth and James changed the law of witchcraft by making it a felony, thus removing the accused from jurisdiction of the ecclesiastical courts to the courts of common law. This provided at least that the accused persons theoretically enjoyed the benefits of ordinary criminal procedure.
Okay, so rather than being tried by religious people in the church, they had to actually be tried in a court of law.
Yes.
Okay. Which does, in a way, seem fair. I think it's a better way.
It is, because, I mean, look at all the ones who were wiped out because they went through...
Yeah.
That
any church-related ones, they're already biased to start off with.
Yes. So burning at the stake was eliminated except in cases of witchcraft that were also petty treason. Most convicted were hanged instead. Any witch who had committed minor witchcraft offences, which was punishable by 1 year in prison, and was accused and found guilty a second time, were then sentenced to death.
Oh, right, okay, so if you're a repeat offender.
Yes.
Okay.
So we are, this is the second Witchcraft Act of the 1649. Through the 1640s, the General Assembly of the Church of Scotland and the Commissioner of the Kirk lobbied that for the enforcement and extension of the Witchcraft Act of 1563, which had been the basis of the previous witch trial. The Covenanter regime passed a series of acts to enforce godliness in 1649, which made capital offences of blasphemy, the worship of false gods, and for beaters and cursers of their parents. This also passed a new Witchcraft Act that ratified the existing Act of 1563 and extended it to deal with consorters of devils and familiar spirits who would now be punishable with death.
Ooh. So does that include the... Did that include killing the familiars? Because I'm pretty certain at some point they killed familiars along with actual witches. So
did they?
The cats, yeah, they killed cats and dogs. With them sometimes, there was a case. I'm sure it happened multiple times, and I can't think for the life of me off the top of my head. But yeah, there was a case where this familiar, that she'd made, the witch she'd confessed, she said she used familiars to do this, this and this, and I think it resulted in a death. So they killed the familiar along with the witch.
That's what happens in a lot of African things now, that they will kill cats and then hang them on the walls and stuff.
Yeah, because I've seen an old, you know, like the little medieval... drawing things, and it's one where they got the witches, but they got a cat upside down as well, and that's they're all being burned at the stake.
I didn't think about that. I didn't come across them when I was researching my cases. They mentioned familiars, but they never mentioned what happened to the familiars.
Yeah, I don't think they killed them in every case, but I think ones where they were so certain.
Yeah, because in some they weren't sure like what the familiar was. It was 1 minute a dog, one minute a frog.
Yeah, they can change. Yeah, witchcraft often changes her familiars to suit her situation, which is what I shall properly delve into in the 2 weeks' time on the case of... Well, I do a whole episode on familiars themselves.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that.
It's a good one. Lots of cute little animals. But yes.
I wonder if anyone has like a hippo familiar.
Oh!
Does it have to be in your house?
No, you can make it whatever you want.
Okay.
Because there was cases of witches. There was one, she said she changed hers to help her with her circumstances.
Mm.
So I think she had a cat or a dog. But then she was so poor that she couldn't afford to, she needed to sell its bed. So she changed it into, I think it was a bird or something that could sit on her shoulder so it didn't need a blanket anymore. Oh. And she could sell the blanket because it didn't need it anymore.
That's cute.
Yeah. So really, they're quite adaptable, really. It's quite clever. I mean, there's also, I'm sure... depending on who you want to believe, they also did it for malevolent reasons.
Yes, well, she's a woman, so of course it's malevolent.
Yeah, she did have a cute little pussycat, but then she turned it into a big tiger.
No.
so it could gobble you up. I don't think there was many cases of a tiger, but...
No, that would come in use. That would.
I think I'd have a horse, because then that's my transport as well.
What would I have? I don't know.
Maybe I'd change it. I'd want a little cuddly one, like, for in bed in the winter, so you got something to keep you warm.
Wait, could we have Bigfoot?
Yeah, why not? Cuddly. Yeah, of course we can. Okay. But then if we've got to travel miles, like I said, turn it into a horse, and you've got your own transport, haven't you? I mean, not so much a problem now, because we have cars, but back then...
We have cars.
You have a car. You're my chauffeur.
I am. Or we could just hop on Bigfoot's back.
Oh, so he's going to give you like a piggyback.
Yeah, he can stride. He's quite strong. One of us can go on the front, one of us can go on the back.
Or maybe we do turn into... You're asking about a hippo. Maybe we do get a hippo. I mean, it'd be very steady travel, but... Could probably carry everything with you as well. I imagine they're quite strong.
I don't think anyone's messing with the hippo, are they?
No. I don't know. How fast can hippos move? Because, like, rhinos can still move quite quick. Maybe want a rhino, because that could, like, headbutt someone.
Yeah. I think a hippo's kind of more lazy.
Yeah. Although they can swim quite well.
I don't know why I came up with a hippo.
I don't. It's an unusual one. Mm. I do like baby hippos, though. They're very cute.
They are very cute. I'm very distracted. There's a few more acts to go. One major act.
Okay.
So there's a Witchcraft Act of 1735. This marked a complete reversal in attitudes. Penalties for practice of witchcraft as traditionally constituted, which by that time was considered by many influential figures to be an impossible crime, were replaced by penalties for the pretense of witchcraft. A person who claimed to have the power to call upon spirits or foretell the future or cast spells, or discover the whereabouts of stolen goods, was to be punished as a vagrant and a con artist, subject to fines and imprisonment. This act applied to the whole of Great Britain, repealing both the 1563 Scottish Act and the 1604 English Act.
Okay.
The Witchcraft Act of 1735 remained in force in Britain well into the 20th century, until its eventual repeal with the enactment of the Fraudulent Mediums Act of 1951. The Fraudulent Medium Act was repealed on the 26th of May 2018 by the new Consumer Protection Regulations following an EU directive targeting unfair sales and marketing practices.
Right, okay.
So you cannot, well, you can, but you can't say that you are a medium and you can, like, offer your services.
Okay.
But people do that, though, so... Yeah. I don't get why.
I think maybe it's you can't charge money for it. So no. It's like you can do that and be that, but you can't do it for financial gain.
Offer money, yeah. But then you shouldn't even claim. I don't.
Yeah, that's what hard. This is where the thing for me is, if you genuinely do that, you
don't take the money. But then I suppose you need to make money to make a living.
But. Oh.
Yes.
Okay. He agrees.
Yes.
But then I suppose people could say, well, they could get another job on top and they do that as a hobby in their spare time. I suppose it depends how you want to look at it.
True. But look, on Etsy, you can buy spells.
Okay.
Which will link to the modern witchcraft episode.
Yes.
Which I'll dive into in the future.
I suppose it depends, are they selling it under... I suppose if it went to court, could they say they're selling text rather than... Like, you know, like a book... So it's like text from a book.
So I was doing a little research and it looks like they perform a thing. You just tell them what you want to happen and then they say that they've done it.
Oh, okay.
And then if they want you to like do anything to help encourage the spell, they'll send you what you have to do in order to enforce it. I don't know.
Interesting.
So I guess that would be against the act, right?
I don't know. Because not dob anyone in.
Because then how do you...
distinguish between...
And also, how do you say that they offered me this, it didn't work, I want my money back? Or how did they prove that it didn't work, or how do they prove that it did work?
I don't know.
That's interesting. Maybe you should buy some spells. See if they work.
See if they work. Mm. Yeah, but then what happens if they don't? Oh, I had a little squeak. Oh, it's Ralph.
Ralph with his ball. He's scared of that ball. But he likes it now.
But he was scared at first.
He was scared of it because it's slightly higher than his original. So he kept howling at it.
He is cute.
Baby. He's all right.
You love him really, Natasha. But yes. No, it's an interesting one. I don't know how we'd appeal that now. I suppose people don't really consider it a crime or a problem now. So maybe it just doesn't get reported. Maybe if it got reported more.
I guess also if it was like punishable by death as well, it might be slightly different. Seeing as it's just like you get a slap on the wrist maybe.
Yeah. Probably. I think more you maybe get a fine in order to pay back the person the original money. I'm guessing that's how it would go. I feel like they'd want to try and solve it outside of court. Like, you know, a lot of disputes nowadays, they ask them not to take them to trial. They ask them to try and dispute it without taking it to court. So I'm guessing that's probably just what they do in modern day, especially in like countries like ours.
Yeah. Where they're probably like, do you really believe? And it's like, yes.
It's like, you can easily settle this. It's playground stuff.
Mm.
I suppose the only reason they'd change it is if someone actually got harmed, but then they'd maybe... I don't think they'd prosecute it under anything witchy. They'd just prosecute it under murder, wouldn't they? Or manslaughter, depending on whether the person survived or not.
Under regular laws, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Interesting.
Are we jumping into the English trials now?
Yes.
Okay. Got more of me talking.
Yeah.
Jump into the English witch trials. So the witch trials are known to have occurred in England during the Middle Ages. These cases were few and mainly concerned cases towards people of the elite.
Okay.
Examples of these were the trials of Eleanor Cobham, who was an English noblewoman who was first the mistress and then the second wife of Humphrey, Duke of Gloucester, who in 1441 was forcibly divorced and sentenced to life in prison for treasonable necromancy.
Ooh.
The punishment being most likely to have been politically motivated, and the trial of Marjorie Jordimain, who was accused of treasonable witchcraft and subsequently burned at the stake in 1441.
Okay.
So these two happened the same year. However, of this fact, Marjorie wasn't the first woman to have been executed for witchcraft. Agnes Waterhouse, also known as Mother Waterhouse, was the first to be executed, and she died in 1566. She was accused along with two other women, Elizabeth Francis and Joan Waterhouse.
Sorry. I'm like really concentrating on what you're reading. I'm like, yes, yes.
Agnes confessed to being a witch and had a familiar, which was a cat or a toad.
Oh.
By the name of Satan.
Aye.
During the trial, Elizabeth was examined first and confessed the familiar was Satan was originally hers, that her grandmother, Mother Eve, had given to her, and that Mother Eve had taught her witchcraft at 12 years old.
Right, okay.
Elizabeth kept the cat for 15 to 16 years before giving it to Agnes. This is a very old cat.
It is a very old cat.
Elizabeth is the first one accused and is the one who accuses Agnes.
Right, okay.
She was given a lighter sentence but was hanged after a second conviction 13 years later, which goes back to the Witchcraft Acts.
Yes.
So, yeah, you get away with it once, but you're caught doing it again, you get hanged.
You're in trouble.
Yeah. A pamphlet from 1579 shows that they were sisters, Agnes and Elizabeth.
Right, okay.
Joan Waterhouse testified that she once tried to exorcise the cat while her mother, Agnes, was away. Joan had been refused a piece of bread and cheese from a neighbour's child.
Right, okay.
Who is also called Agnes. She is called Agnes Brown. And when she was refused the bread and cheese, she invoked the familiar's help. The familiar, which is in the form of a toad, supposedly haunted Agnes. Now, in the form of a dog with horns.
Oh.
So it changes.
Okay. So a little bouncy frog was it a Labrador?
I don't know. I think it was a black dog and then it had horns, which is like, how do you...
That sounds like haunted. A goat.
Yeah. This is what I mean. The familiars aren't consistent because they're the same spirit. They just turn into whatever they want.
Yeah.
Okay.
So basically the witch, they'll still be tied to that witch.
Okay.
Just she can change their form.
Okay. That's always what I was confused
But they effectively, about. Yeah, they serve the witch.
Okay. The most incriminating piece of evidence was Agnes Brown's account of asking the dog whose its dame was, to which the dog wagged its head toward Agnes Waterhouse's home. Joan didn't claim to have used the services of Satan the Familiar to any large degree, but testifying to its existence helped convict the two other women, and on the 29th of July 1566, Agnes was executed.
Uh-oh.
There's a lot of death in these, we know.
Just a little bit.
It wasn't until the second half of the 16th century that the wide-scale witch hunts took place in England, becoming more common towards the end of the 16th century and early 17th centuries, particularly since the succession of King James the
First?
Sixth and first to the throne of Scotland and England. King James had strong interest in witch trials since 1589 trials of Copenhagen that led to the North Berwick trials in Scotland in 1590, and I will talk about that in another episode.
Yeah.
The English witch trials reached their most intense phase during the English Civil War of the 1640s and the Puritan era of the 1650s. This period was known for witch hunters such as Matthew Hopkins, who I, again, will talk about in another episode.
Yes, witch hunters. Yeah.
Yes. The English trials vary from other nations who accuse witches of attending witches' Sabbath or having made a pact with the devil.
Okay.
The typical victims of an English trial was a poor old woman with a bad reputation who were accused by her neighbours of having familiars and having injured or caused harm to other people's livestock using sorcery.
Okay.
So, yeah, you look throughout the other European ones, it's always like they're making pacts with the devil, whereas it's not common with the English ones.
Yeah, and I find a lot of the European ones as well, it's like more things like on individual people, like harming people.
Yeah. This is all about like, oh, we can't eat because you've caused harm.
Yeah.
But there, we will go
into you caused
into
famine
this.
In our cows.
Yeah. This is, we're going to touch on this, but yeah, there's, during this time, it's, the weather is too cold for anything.
Yeah.
It affects, this is what causes
the environmental
conditions
actually cause the diseases and the crop failure and the loss of livestock, but it's quite easy to blame it on witches.
Exactly, and we will touch on that. On the 22nd of July 1612, five men and women were executed at Abington Gallows in Northampton for witchcraft of various kinds, including murder and bewitching pigs. It's such a weird thing. The murder thing I kind of understand, but bewitching pigs, what the hell do you do to a pig?
Make it oink more.
Okay, maybe. The Northampton ones were among the earliest documented cases in which dunking was used to hunt witches. The Northamptonshire trials may have been a precursor to the Pendle witch trials that began just a few weeks earlier. And you're going to talk about
that. Yeah, I had to do a whole episode on that because it's a big one.
In 1589, a young family named the Throckmortons.
Oh.
I think that's a very cool name.
It is a cool name.
Moved into the manor house beside the church in the tiny rural English village of Warboys.
Yeah.
It's a cool name.
It is a cool name.
20 miles north of Cambridge. Soon afterwards, one of the family's young daughters, Jane, began suffering seizures and fits, which the local doctors found impossible to ease or cure. Then one day, the Throckmortons' neighbours, John and Alice Samuel, and their daughter Agnes happened to pay the family a visit. There's always an Agnes.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know if it's just, it was
it's common
the most
name.
Popular name. But yeah, in terms of that girl having the seizures, that's quite similar to what happened in American one, because that was a major one for the American ones, were seizures.
Yeah, this is the thing, though. Like, seizures are not caused by witches.
No.
There's just
neurological.
Yes, they happen.
The donor's usher. It was a witch, a big bad witch.
I'm so glad we live in these times with science and facts. So Agnes, their daughter, happened to pay a family visit, the Throckmortons a visit. But as soon as Alice arrived and took a seat by the fire, Jane's condition suddenly worsened, and she began to point wildly at Alice, screaming, Look where the old witch sits.
She just sounds like a bit of a brat to me.
Yeah, this is the thing. This is what I, every case I'm looking at, it's like the kids are just being spoiled little kids who were just getting away with
murder.
Yeah, exactly. Because the people they accuse end up being killed, which is effectively being murdered.
Yeah.
So the mother quickly rebuked Jane and thought nothing more of it. But as more of the children began showing similar symptoms and a respected physician was unable to discover the cause, suspicion returned to the Samuels.
Right, okay.
Even Lady Cromwell, the wife of Oliver Cromwell's grandfather and a close friend of the Throckmortons, once confronted Alice about her apparent crimes. When Lady Cromwell died a little over a year later, her, quote, murder was added to the list of crimes of which the Samuel family was eventually accused.
Oh.
Imprisoned and tried before the Bishop of Lincoln, Alice, John and Agnes were all found guilty of witchcraft and hanged in 1593.
Ooh.
Even the kid, what did the kid do?
Existed.
Because so John got hanged because he was married to a witch?
Yeah. So he's still consorting. He's not handed her over, if you like.
No.
In a weird way, they have consorted with a witch.
I know, but what if he wasn't aware?
Yeah, but they're claiming he did. It's
so frustrating.
He's like, you must notice she's got a big cauldron in the in the kitchen.
That's just what she makes my curry in.
Did they have curry then?
Probably not.
Not in the UK, anyway.
No.
Hmm. Or did she? Because she conjured it up.
Oh. Had we colonised the most of the world? I think...
We were a good way through, I think.
Yeah. So, probably. But I think they're probably like, oh no, that's the foreigner food.
Okay.
They probably think...
Spicy.
Yeah. That's probably what it is. It's like, it's spicy. It's witchcraft. How dare it hurt my tongue?
It's burning my throat. Oh, can you imagine if they had your spicy noodles?
Oh, I love my spicy noodles.
They definitely think they're dying and being cursed by a witch.
Not the Korean fire noodles, though. No, that felt like my throat was bleeding.
Yeah, maybe that was a witch. Maybe they had that was a spell on them.
Okay, back to the case. Because I'm going to be thinking of noodles now. Following the arrest of Alison Device in Pendle in 1612, the discovery that witchcraft was being practiced in Lancashire caused a wave of paranoia that swept across the country and eventually implicated three women: Jane Southwood, Janet Barely, and her daughter Ellen, or who sometimes goes by Eileen, from the neighbouring village of Salisbury.
Yeah.
Tried at the same Lancashire hearing as the Pendle witches, the trio were suspected of witchcraft by Janet's 14-year-old granddaughter and Ellen's niece, Grace Sourbutts.
Sorry.
I know, that's why I paused, because I was just like, oh no. Her grim testimony accused the women of everything from shapeshifting.
Did she have a sour bottom?
She may have had a sour bottom. Janet had reportedly transformed herself into a dog right before Grace's eyes.
Right, okay.
Ooh. To cavorting with demons, which is, quote, black things going upright, yet not like men in the face.
Oh. Oh.
That is what she said.
The first bit, I took as something else, but it's fine.
That is what my fact is. But we will
talk about... Oh, sorry, that. If I ruined your fact.
No.
Okay.
I think we can... That's fine. We'll talk... Everyone will forget about it anyway. Grace described them as the black things going upright and not like men in the face. So cannibalism... The three women had supposedly abducted a young baby from a local merchant who was Thomas Walshman.
Right, okay.
And drank blood from its navel.
Ooh.
When the baby died a few days later, they were accused of robbing the grave and cooking the remains.
Oh. Sort of usual one.
Yes. But it's just a kid, isn't it? A kid's just making up stuff to be like, I saw them do this. I saw them do this.
Yeah,
it's like, no. If they were doing that, they probably would have eaten you as well. Just kids are making up stories about women and then they end up dead. Unlike the trial of the Pendle witches, however, the Samlesbury trial was quickly turned on its head. With the evidence against them concluded, Jane, Janet and Ellen were finally given the chance to speak and immediately pleaded with the judge not for clemency or mercy as they might have expected, but to force Grace to tell the court who had coerced her into making accusations against them. Grace's immediate look of guilt raised the judge's suspicions, and he ordered her to be taken from the court and interrogated by two justices of the peace.
In a way, that's good, though, that they have then sort of not gone back on the child, but the judges, rather than just going down one track, you just want to, oh, actually, the child does look a bit suspicious.
Which is very good, because this is like 1612, so you could have easily been like, no, the child would never lie.
Yeah, the innocence of the child.
These children are not innocent. When they returned, it emerged that the entire story had been concocted by a local priest who, at the time of considerable religious upheaval in Britain, had strong-armed Grace into incriminating her Protestant relatives.
Oh.
All three women were then acquitted.
Rightfully so.
The Bideford trials in Devon of 1682 came towards the end of the witch-hunting craze in Britain, which peaked between 1550 and 1660. Three women, who are Tuppence Lloyd, Mary Trembles, and Susanna Edwards, were suspected of causing illness of a local woman by supernatural means. All three were found guilty and then executed.
Oh. It's not good.
No. Cases became fewer and fewer towards the end of the 17th century. Views on witchcraft were changing. Mary Hicks and her daughter Elizabeth have been referred as the last people executed for witchcraft in England in 1716. The witch trials formally ended in 1735 after the induction of the Witchcraft Act of 1735.
Yes.
And that is the end of the witchcraft trials. You're going to cover the Pendleton.
Yes, yeah, so Pendle. I do the Pendleton. I also do the Chelmsford and the Paisley.
Okay.
I cover them. Yeah. In an individual case.
Yeah, so I thought I'd leave them out.
Yeah, because they're quite... It's hard, isn't it? Like, this one, obviously, want to briefly try and get through how it spread across the world. But there's so many cases. Yeah. Where it's impossible for us to cover every single witch in every single case.
Yes.
But we've tried to do it where we've then, for our individual cases, I think the ones that sparked us most, we've tried to pick out the most prominent ones.
Yeah.
And the ones that maybe had the biggest effect.
Yeah, so the Witchcraft Act finally sorted the witchcraft trials out and got rid of them, which is good.
Which is good, that's what we want.
Which is rather than prosecuting these people for a kid just saying, she looked at me weird. Her dog had horns.
Actually, looking at me weird. Maybe we could...
okay. Could maybe use that, okay. So the Witchcraft Act of 1735 brought an end to the trials in England.
Yeah.
But before then, the trials spread throughout England, Ireland, and Scotland, and I'll talk about the Scottish ones in a different episode. But they were, all these trials were kicked off by trials that were in Europe that spread all the way throughout the Western and Eastern Europe, yes?
Yeah, there were so many in Europe, which is massive. So I'll start it off with the French one. So these are not necessarily in chronological order, but yeah, I'll basically go through all the major European countries that had witch trials in.
Okay.
So, in the French witch trials, it's estimated that between 1550 and 1700, there were over 2,000 witch trials in France. Now, some of these are very small ones, literally like individual witches.
I know, this is what we mean, where we can't touch on every single one.
Yeah. So, this, however, is difficult to be exact, as the French records were not well preserved. A lot of the information is secondary.
That's common with most of the trials.
Yeah, lots of it's either lost between wars, it's just not documented correctly.
The German ones are very documented.
Oh,
and I will tell you about that in a different episode.
Ooh, good. So, no National Witchcraft Act was enacted in France, and so they fell under the jurisdiction of local courts, and so trials varied greatly between regions. And I will go on to explain this a bit more a bit later. I also delve into it quite deep into an individual case that I touch on, but I will mention it in here as well.
Okay.
So, Northern France fell under the jurisdictions of the Parliament of Paris, which was not normally liberal and liberal in enforcing the death penalty. However, local courts did not always defer to Paris, which is another factor that makes it difficult to work out the exact figures in France in terms of witch hunt. So present-day northeastern France is known to have experienced very severe witch hunts close to the border of the territories of the Catholic, close to the borders of the territories of the Catholic prince bishops, as it was then. But it is this part of France belonged to the Holy Roman Empire.
Yeah.
So the first witch trial is believed to be held in Le Châtelet in Paris in 1390, so very early on in comparison to others, which ended with the execution of Jean de Brigue during the first half of the 16th century. So yeah, it went on for 200 years. Okay. During the first half of the 16th century, a few cases of witch trials were noted to have taken place in France. In 1539, a witch trial resulted in the four executions in Beaujolais. In 1553, a Faustian magician, as he was quoted, I don't know exactly what that means, was executed in Poitiers. And in 1558 and 1562, witch trials conducted in Nevers and Toulouse both resulted in three executions. As mentioned, no specific law was introduced at the time, but there was a book called Demon on Marie by Jean Bodin, which was...
The King James wrote one as well.
Yeah, they're all linked. Yeah.
Yeah.
By Jean Bodin, which was published in 1578. And this would have a big impact upon the witch trials in France. His book talks of the influential concept of pact witchcraft based on the deal with the devil and the belief that the evil spirit would use strategy to impose doubt on judges to look upon magicians as madmen and hypochondriacs deserving of compassion rather than chastisement. That's right, isn't it? I look at these and I think, have I said it properly? Right.
I struggled with mine.
He wrote in extreme terms about procedures in sorcery trials, opposing the normal safeguards of justice. His advocacy of relaxation was aimed directly at existing standards laid out by Parliament of Paris. He asserted that not even one which could be incorrectly condemned if the correct procedures were followed, because rumours concerning sorcerers were almost always true. The book was so influential that it was soon translated into German. So again, it would make its way around the whole of Europe. So then in northern France, between 1568 and 1625, the Parliament of Paris only confirmed 100 death sentences for witchcraft. I say only, it's still a lot, but the Parliament of Paris refused to follow the example of other countries and made witchcraft an exceptional crime. And in 1588, the Parliament issues regulations to prevent what they termed as excessive zeal and exaggerations in witchcraft persecutions. However, it's known that many local courts ignored the recommendations of a number of local witchcraft sentences were never reported or appealed to Paris, and obviously that number then left unknown. So basically, even though the Parliament of Paris brought this in and said, look, you can't go around executing, and before you go a trial, you have to send like a thing to us, we have to approve the trial first. Yeah. Then what happened was a lot of sort of backdoor ones sort of happened, if you like, because the churches then did it in secret. They obviously weren't going to the Parliament of Paris, because
of course not,
they pretty much knew that the Parliament of Paris would effectively reject the trial.
Exactly.
So northeastern France, part of the Holy Roman Empire, this was an area strongly affected by witch hunts. It's estimated that 800 witch trials took place in these areas, with numerous executions in the period of 1603 and 1614, then again a big cluster in 1627 to 1632, and again with another 100 reported executions between 1658 and 1661.
It's crazy.
It is absolutely mental. So then in southern France, that was not under the jurisdiction of the Parliament of Paris, and a number of large witch trials were conducted during the first half of the 17th century, among them being the famous Le Bourde witch hunts of 1609 and the Aix-en-Provence procession. Ending now is the sort of... It obviously spread across the whole of it, but I'm sort of coming to an end. So, Perron Gogillon had been referred to as the last woman to be executed for witchcraft in France in 1678. There have been differing opinions as to whether the affair of the poison of 16, which was a trial between 1679 and 1682, should be defined as a witch trial or not. Whilst the accused of the affair of poisons had positioned themselves as professional witches, they were prosecuted and executed for the poison and murder rather than for witchcraft. Now, I actually going to do a case on the affair of poisons.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this is a little bit where I'm now going to bring in King Louis. So, King Louis XIV introduced an edict which was designed to limit the persecution of witchcraft in France. The edict did not abolish the witch trials, but did restrict them by defining witchcraft as criminal superstition rather than being real, and punishable only if combined with poisoning and blasphemy. After 1682, witchcraft persecutions in France were limited to small and rare cases. This is with the exception of the trial of Wizards of Lyon in 1742 to 1745. And I'm basically, along with that, with the affairs of poisons, I'm going to put together, because I'm going to go in depth about how it basically brought around the end of the trials, and these were major ones in it.
Okay.
And I'll talk a little bit more on King James's act that he brought in.
Okay.
So the next big European one that I touched on was the Spanish witch trials. So the trials in Spain were considerably less in compared with other countries. They did not consider the persecution of witchcraft a priority, and in fact discouraged it. And rather than having it conducted by secular courts, they'd rather see it go through a proper court of law.
It's surprising, that is.
Yeah. I was very surprised by it. It's very different. But then have they watched how the other countries have dealt with it and had a very different view? Like, it depends who's in charge. Is their view very different? Mm. They might be a bit witchy themselves, so therefore, okay, we don't want to persecute our own.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Which is a possibility. So this was similar with the witch trials in Portugal. Whilst trials were discouraged, they were particularly severe trials in the Spanish Netherlands. By early 16th century, the witchcraft ideology was accepted in Spain. The Basque Kingdom of Navarre had been conquered and became part of Spain in 1512. Tensions rose, and this resulted in one of the earliest mass witch trials in Spain. So the Navarre witch trials. They took place in the Pyrenees in the Kingdom of Navarre in 1525 to 1526. It would lead to decisions that would be made by the Spanish Inquisition on how to conduct the trial, so a major one. In 1525, the Council of Navarre sent a special commissioner to inspect the mountain regions of of the Navarrese northeastern Pyrenees. The commissioner brought along two girl witches who knew how to discover witches, because obviously they were witches themselves. They were aged 9 and 11.
Oh.
During the inspection tour, the girls inspected villagers for signs of the devil's mark in their eyes. So all the others are to link with moles traditionally, or war.
No, there's one similar in the Scottish witch trials.
Oh, yeah. So maybe they've done a bit of travelling. At this point, was there many, you know, like the kings and queens, was there much of a link between Spain and Scotland? I wonder if that's, you know, if you look at who's actually ruling each country, maybe that, I think that has quite an impact on the acts that they bring in. Because if you imagine if you've got someone Spanish married to someone Scottish, I should think if you look at their conversations they would have, they'd have quite similar ideas. So obviously, the girls were then looking for the devil's mark in people's eyes. This then led to a number of trials, although the exact number is unknown. The commissioner arrested and executed an unknown number of people for witchcraft in 5 different places. He purchased masses for the confiscated property of the condemned to ask for the blessing of God for his mission. The Navarrese witch hunt, however, provoked intervention by the Supreme Council of the Spanish Inquisition. In August 1525, the Inquisition was granted jurisdiction over the witch hunt, and 30 people accused of witchcraft were handed over to them. They also insisted on inspecting the ongoing trials, which is good. So that's similar to the French one, how they then, the courts wanted to take over from the priests. So in December that year, the Spanish Inquisition issued guidelines. They cautioned skepticism against the spells, which caused most accusations and death sentences previously. They banned the confiscation of property to anyone who had been condemned, and they paid more attention to re-educating witches rather than issuing death sentences. So basically they tried to find cures for witchcraft, if you like, of these supposed people, rather than killing them. I'm not convinced it was always done nicely, but I feel like they were imprisoned and probably, I don't know, given different sort of poisons and potions to drink that would cure them of their witchcraft ailments. That's obviously better that they're not sentenced into death, but I'm not 100% convinced that meant what happened was nice. I feel like they were likely then given some sort of imprisonment, like sentence, and they were then probably forced to drink like different potions or concoctions that would cure them of their witchcraft ailments, if you like.
But then in a way, that's witchcraft. If you're creating potions... It's,
well, okay, more medicines then, isn't it, if you like. Okay. It's still a... To me, it's still a potion.
Yeah, exactly.
But... Because to me, modern day, a potion is a medicine.
Yeah. No, it's magic.
Okay. It depends how you want to look at it. But it's... For me, I think they were basically then seeing it as a medical issue and trying to cure it that way. But you think some of the things they would have been subject to. You think of medical practices back then, like leeches, all that other stuff. Strange concoctions. I'm not convinced it would have been all that pleasant. No, it's better, I think, than burning at the stake.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But, I don't think that means necessarily that it was nice.
No.
So I think it's to be taken with an air of caution.
Okay.
So these guidelines were then followed by the Spanish Inquisition into witchcraft cases from 1526 until the Basque trials in 1609. During that time, many people were executed by the Inquisition, especially in Navarre. So this seems to be this area is a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the largest persecution in Navarre took place in 1527, and it resulted in residents being burnt in a fire. The Spanish Inquisition did not always succeed in keeping secular courts from dealing with the witchcraft cases, and a failure to do so resulted in a great witch hunt in Catalonia in 1618 to 1622 with about 100 victims.
Mm.
So after 1622, witch trials in Spain dwindled until the mid-17th century, and that's then going to bring me on to the Basque witch trials.
Okay.
Now, in the 17th century, that represented the last of the serious attempt at rooting out witchcraft from Navarre. The trials began in January 1609. It was influenced by the similar persecutions conducted in the bordering French Basque country. Although the number of executed was small, it was almost certainly the biggest single trial of people investigated. By the end of the trial, some 7,000 cases had been heard.
7,000.
And obviously the Inquisition had to look into all of those.
Yeah.
So in the first phase of the trial, 6 were burnt to death. A further 5 died whilst awaiting sentencing. So out of the 7,000, we're not doing too bad so far.
Mm.
So 1,384 of the 7,000 cases were children between the ages of 7 and 14.
Oh my God.
I know. So this, for me, is a mass child one in comparison to other countries. So it's thought the number was so high because pardons had been promised to those who voluntarily reported themselves and denounced their accomplices.
Okay.
So I think there's a mixture of one, pressure from the church, but also pressure from parents to say to the children, quick, look, just say you are one, but you denounce it and you'll be okay.
Like, you're a demon child. And then the kid's like, oh yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't. My sister would have been a devil child. She was nicknamed Devil Child.
See?
There you go. She's a witch. Then 5,000 were implicated purely by others coming forward. 1,802 of those would later retract what they said, attributing their confessions to torture. Then only 6 out of the 1,802 maintained their confessions and claimed to have returned to Sabbaths. So out of these 7,000, very few actually died and were convicted.
Mm.
So I think, like I said, it's almost like a mass hysteria, if you like.
It is.
And literally just everyone left, right and centre was throwing accusations out. Contrary to the usual picture, the Inquisition of the Inquisition, ready to believe all and every confession of wrongdoing, educated Spaniards were typically sceptical of witchcraft and considered it a northern or Protestant superstition.
Mm-hmm.
Salazar, the youngest judge and a panel of three, was so sceptical about the ordeal, stating that he had found no substantial proof of witchcraft in his travels, in spite of numerous confessions. In addition to this, he questioned the whole basis of the trials. So this guy kind of sounds sensible.
Yes.
And for him, he thinks the whole thing superstition and religion, which effectively is what it was.
Yeah, that's it in a nutshell.
But one person out of however many, I don't think he was necessarily listened to straight away. I think he's more appreciated now than he was back then. But it's a little bit late.
Mm-hmm. Just a little bit.
So this then brings me on to the trials of in Portugal. Like the Spanish, the Portuguese Inquisition did not consider witchcraft to be a priority. However, compared to the Spanish Inquisitions, the Portuguese were far more efficient at preventing secular courts from conducting their own witch trials. Only 7 people were ever executed for sorcery in Portugal. So, as a country, I know it's not a massive country, but in comparison to all these European ones going on at the time, they were in the thousands. 7 people is nothing. Witchcraft was considered a sin in the 16th century in Portugal. However, the Portuguese Inquisition considered the persecution of Jews to be their main priority and showed very little interest in sorcery.
Yeah.
And to me, that gave me very sort of German Nazi sort of vibes.
Yeah, I think they're still going after a group of people, regardless of their religion.
Or rather than following the trend of witches, for them, the Jews and Jewish people are a problem to them. So that for them is their problem at the time.
So I thought, oh, we got away with them, like, not killing anyone, but nope.
No, they were just after other people. Anyone else put forward for sorcery were normally given mild sentences, such as fines or exiled from their congregation. So actually, in comparison to the others, I suppose it is quite nice. It's basically a slap on the wrist, isn't it? I mean, I know you've been exiled, but it won't be that difficult. You're only exiled from your congregation, not your place of home. So, yes, it might be a bit difficult in your hometown. But I suppose you just got to either practice your religion on your own terms or join another congregation.
I don't want to be a part of your congregation.
Sounds a bit shitty. Anyway, the biggest witch hunt in Portugal was the Lisbon witch trial in 1559, where 5 were executed. Subsequently, an investigation followed that trial, which resulted in one more execution in Coimbra in 1560. Between 1626 and 1744, the Portuguese Inquisition prosecuted 818 people, but only one of them was actually executed in Evora in 1626. Most prosecutions were against cunning men and female fortune tellers. So, but like I said, they were effectively given a fine, which is quite similar to what you mentioned earlier in terms of modern day.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it just seems, I don't think they really saw witchcraft as a problem.
No.
It was more like, okay, it's only really going to be an issue maybe if they stop conning people, so it's a bit of a fine, slap on the wrist, maybe a very short sentence.
Yeah.
On your way, we don't really care.
Because I guess you can't prove it, because it might exist, but we can't improve it.
A lot of it is just so wildly out there that I feel like there's no way it did happen anyway. But yeah. So next I'll touch on the Dutch ones, which starts off in the Spanish Netherlands. So I thought that was a good one to follow on from the Portuguese. So the Roermond, I think it's Roermond, yeah. The Roermond witch trials took place in and around the city of Roermond in the Spanish Netherlands in 1613. It was the largest witch trial in present-day Netherlands. It caused the death of 64 people by burning.
Oh.
Most prosecuted were peasants who had been accused by other peasants for bewitching their family and crops. They would go on to they would go to the accused and demand for them to bless them and their children and their animals and crops. This was meant to dispel the bewitching. It did mean the accused would then be held responsible for bewitching, and the dispel was seen as an admittance of their guilt. So basically, someone would go and accuse and say, Bob put a spell on bewitched my crops and my cattle. And the person goes, no, I didn't. And they go, we demand you dispel this bewitchment. Okay, I dispel it. Oh, wait, no, now you're definitely a witch because you've dispelled it. So yeah.
You can't win.
Yeah, you can't win. Yeah. That's it. I think you're screwed either way, aren't you?
Yeah. But I think that's what they've done it for. They design it in a way that regardless of your innocence, you're going to accidentally say you are.
Yeah.
By being like, okay, if you just say this, you won't have to...
Some of them, they bribe them with a lesser sentence, didn't they?
And then it's like, so you are a witch.
Yeah.
Now you're going to be burnt on the stake. Yeah, exactly.
It's like, there was no innocent until proven guilty. It was, you were just guilty and you had to prove your innocence.
Yeah, even then it was just like, no, I don't believe you.
Yeah. Yeah, they just weren't listened to. So the accused witch would also start her own slander trial against the accusers, which would then prevent a trial. So a lot of the time, it was tit for tat, but it also resulted in not many trials going ahead, because then those, which in a way is a bit better, because at least then those accused of witchcraft, they would then be forced to go to trial, and if they were found guilty, they would then, they either risk death themselves, or in a lot of cases, it would have been a sentence and a fine. So they can't afford that either, because they're already starving from their famine, which is why they accused the person in the first place. So the easier thing to do is just go, never mind, we're not bothered about it anymore, we'll just forget it happened, we'll be friends with Bob again.
Yeah, it's just like, I'll bang you both your heads together if you don't sort it out. Yeah. It's basically that.
But yeah. So the infamous trials of 1613 were only known about because of a pamphlet. The actual process papers have been lost, so there was no official records in the courts. It's just come from a pamphlet that survived.
That's like a repeated thing. It's like there's barely any documentation. It's just pamphlets.
Yeah, and it's literally, it's basically like if someone just decided to send it. And I do think now so many things, like, I mean, and I suppose today more things, stuff come through technology. But you imagine stuff that you get sent through the post, you like just pretty much chuck it away. You think buyers actually doing that were losing stuff, because what happens if in like 2,000 years time, people are like, oh, nothing really bad happened at this point, and actually we've just binned it all, and we've not recorded it, or someone tries to look into it and they go, there's no records of this happening, and it's we just chucked it in the bin.
But you could argue that we document everything on computer.
Yeah, but what happens if in a couple thousand years time the computers are completely different, they don't work anymore? Computer, you know how like we so start writing stuff in books? Yeah, computers might be obsolete, might have something else, never know.
Or there'll be no planets.
I was going to say we'll have to find out, but I won't be alive in 2,000 years' time. Well, I fucking hope not anyway. I'd be very haggard. I would be accused of being a witch then. I would look like an old hag. So some of the charges included against people, miscarriages, diseases in animals and fish, disease in crops, and a loss of livelihood. The church would now also join in on the accusations. The accusations were not only of bewitching, but now that hearsay was allowed, accounts of pacts formed with the devil, including having danced and having intercourse with the devil, would fill the courtroom.
It's weird that hearsay is allowed, because it's hearsay.
But is that, we only think of that nowadays, that we don't allow hearsay? I feel like at the time, it was a form of, well, they said, so...
I don't know, but you could make that up.
I know we could, but I don't think that was really an issue then.
I don't know.
I think because there was a lack of scientific evidence, a medical thing, hearsay, in theory, is probably the only evidence, isn't it?
Yeah, they're probably just like, no one would lie.
Yeah.
It's like, everyone would lie. Yeah,
they're
clergy,
so they're good. As we all know.
No comment.
So, the trial happened over a short period of time, with an average of 2 witches being burnt alive each day. So, not very good. In the Spanish Netherlands.
No, the German ones are fucking
horrible.
Mm.
So that then brings me on to the rest of the Netherlands. So like Portugal, there was very few trials in the Netherlands. Despite losing a lot of archive material, it seems the Northern Netherlands saw most of their trials, for sorcery and witchcraft between 1550 and 1575, which is when prosecutions in the southern Netherlands were only just beginning. There was an earlier trial in Groningen in 1457, which led to the execution of 20 women and a man. Now, the Netherlands became an independent country after the Dutch War of Independence in 1579. So this is where the records get a bit murky, because depending on how you want to look at it, depends of whether it was Netherlands or whether it happened in another country.
Okay.
So it's quite difficult to decipher it, but I'm still classing it as the Netherlands. So during the late 16th century, the Netherlands did experience a couple of high-profile witch trials. In June 1593, the High Court repealed a death sentence for witchcraft from the Schiedam in the Province of Holland. This became a case of precedence, which was henceforth followed as common practice in Holland. This then led to the death penalty for witchcraft being abolished.
Okay.
Now, this case of precedence was then followed by the Providence of followed by the Province of Utrecht, which is where my sister lived for a year, in 1596, although she wasn't alive in 1596, and then again by Groningen in 1597, and also by Gelderland in 1603. Witch trials did still carry on into the 17th century in the Netherlands, but none resulted in death.
Okay.
Which is, I'm guessing, good.
I guess, yeah. So following the Netherlands one, obviously that, I think that probably kicked off the German ones.
Okay.
And I will cover that in a separate episode because that is a mammoth.
Yeah.
It's like, there's a lot.
It's, yeah, they're quite,
they are very detailed in their documentation of everything, including witch trials.
Yes.
So that needs a certain episode. Yeah,
and they're quite grotesque from what I think. I don't know, they just seem so much more extreme in comparison to other countries,
they
I
think.
They
are extreme.
But yeah, I don't know, very strange. Which then leads me on to Austria.
Okay.
So a witch trial in Innsbruck in Austria in 1485 resulted in Henrik Kramer writing the Malleus Maleficarium, I think I did that right, which is basically literature on demonology. However, there were no more witch trials in Austria until the second half of the 16th century. In 1583, Elizabeth Plenicher became the first person executed for sorcery in Vienna. In the 17th century, several witch trial persecutions took place, and one of those being that of Bregenz in 1609, which resulted in 16 executions. In contrast to Germany, the witch trials in Austria was at its most severe during the second half of the 17th century. Around 1,500 people were estimated to have been executed for sorcery in Austria in total.
Wow.
So it's a lot. But Austria at the time was very closely linked with Germany, and I think quite a lot of it crossed over. Because this is the thing we forget when we look at it now, is how those countries were then. A lot of these countries have become independent since.
Yep.
So when you're doing your research, they actually are quite lumped in with other countries, and it's quite hard to decipher them.
Because of the Holy Roman Empire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I got really confused, because I was like, well, I don't get it. Like, is it France? Is it Germany? Is it Spain? Like, what is it? Mm. It's very confusing. And again, when you go back to those Spanish ones, a lot of it's bordering into French.
Yeah.
But it's later wars, they then gain more territory, which actually changes the shape of the country and the territories. So it is a bit confusing.
Yeah.
But yeah, from the records, from what I could make out from us in that part of what would have been main Austria then, it was 1,500 people. So
too many.
One is too many.
Yes, exactly.
But I suppose it's a different time, so I suppose we can't, we can judge, we are judging.
Yes.
But also we can't judge, so we weren't there. So next I'm going to look at trials in Switzerland. It's estimated that up to 6,000 could have been executed in Switzerland by being burnt at the stake. In 1429, Freiburg joined Europe in executing people they suspected of being witches. Freiburg, however, was slightly unusual in that it was political parties executing people without having involved the church. So most of all the other countries, it's come from secular things. So this one was very different.
That's weird.
So the political authorities were using witch trials to assert their position and tighten the grasp on population. So
yeah.
This is why it's different. So especially in rural areas. During the 15th century, most trials were of men who refused to submit to the political authorities. So, but by the 16th and 17th century, once power had been established, accusations of witchcraft were used to regulate law in order to impose social discipline. There were still more women executed overall in the Swiss trials, with women making up to 70-80% of the accused.
Mm.
They were mainly guilty of being poor, single, and simply the fact that they were female.
Oh, so it was...
Yeah, basically. So I think a lot of it as well is there was a bit of overpopulation, there was a lot of mixing together of different religions, and the political, their stance, they wanted it all under one. So it was anyone that then didn't follow their political views... They got rid of. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So in the case of Catalan in 1731, Catalan was the last woman, but I couldn't find her first name, was the last woman to die at the stake in the Swiss trials. Born as a hunchback, she was accused of stirring up destructive storms for the devil and assuming animal shapes. She underwent 13 interrogations. She was then strangled before being burnt in September 1731.
Yeah.
Witch hunts were far more common in French-speaking parts of Switzerland, and patchwork states such as the Holy Roman Empire of Central Europe or loosely bound Swiss Confederation struggled to maintain their grasp on the population. This was also the case in Canton in Freiburg. Prosecution was particularly bad in the Broye district. This was because it was made up of small communes, of which some were Catholic, others were Protestant, some German-speaking, and others French. The borders is where more of the witches were burnt. So, as I've previously said, basically, they're having from the political stance, there's too many mixing from too many different countries. There's too many different ideologies coming into the country, and the political people don't like that because. I suppose it's more of a threat to them, isn't it?
Exactly.
People coming in with new ideas.
Yes.
So they've got to get everyone under the same roof. Yes. And effectively, yeah, I think the witch trials played in quite nicely for them.
Exactly. You can control the masses.
Yes.
Yeah.
I also feel like it was a massive trade route as well, which is why you've got so many different people speaking different languages, which would explain why you've got the mixture of French, German, Catholic, Protestant. Like, I know you still had that in other countries, but I feel like people maybe use this as a bit of a travelling route. But some people, I think they maybe stay briefly, but also their ideas and the things that they can pass on can be quite extreme in that time. It can almost take over a town, maybe. Yeah. You think they could sweep it in with new information. Like, they've already been to Germany and other parts of France where these trials are massive. They come in with their stories. All it takes is one of those travelling people to be a witch hunter.
Mm.
They start spreading stuff, and exactly. It has a detrimental impact. But it, from the political party's point of view, how do they control that? And how do they stop people from... taking it into their own hands.
Exactly.
So for me, what they did wasn't right, and it's no better than the other trials, but I think in comparison to other countries, I think in a weird way their reason for executing people was not better than others, but I think it was more based on actual things rather than like, yeah. So they had a genuine problem in terms of population and extreme views, whereas when you look at these other countries and even ones like in America, it was like, yeah, she made my cow go funny. It didn't produce milk one day, so she's a witch and therefore she needs to be killed. For me, I think I'd rather be killed because my extreme views is ordered that I've learned from another country that was based off basically shit. I've now brought that in and I've encouraged other people to stop killing people for no reason. Like, I think I would then deserve to die for it. It's almost like spreading misinformation, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think that would make me more deserving of the death penalty than the person that was accused of making a cow go funny.
Yeah. No, yeah, you're right.
It's still not right. It's putting someone to death. But I think...
if you didn't spread the misinformation, you wouldn't be in that position. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I think in a weird way, it was maybe handled a bit better. And it was more reasonable. I don't know as though that's the right words. But yeah, I think that's probably the best way to look at it.
I think so.
But yeah, so Natasha obviously also has other European countries because we haven't touched on all of them yet. But we're going to end this episode here for you today. And then at the beginning, we'll do a short recap at the beginning of the next episode. And then we will continue with the European and then go into the Canadian and American trials and the history of those and how they spread. So I hope you've enjoyed.
I hope it's been informative.
It's so hard. There's so much information to bang out. A lot of it is facts. So I'm hoping, not once we've got the history of the trials out of the way, but once we've done that and we can delve into individual cases, we can, like I said, it, not more entertaining, but it'll be less fact and more how we've interpreted it, I think.
Yeah, where in this one we're sticking to the facts.
Yes.
And it's very long.
Yeah, numbers, you've got to concentrate, you've got to listen.
Yeah.
And I've got to concentrate on what I'm reading.
Yeah, exactly. Me too, and I'm just like, oh.
Yeah, no, which I'm not very good at doing, so... Yes, hopefully you've still enjoyed the first episode and we've done enough to entice you back, I hope.
For episode 2.
Yes.
On that note.
In the meantime.
Keep creeping.
And we'll keep digging.